Hey listeners, just jumping in quickly before the podcast to notify you about the Bodytrack Academy educational webinars that we have available via Eventbrite. We cover a variety of topics ranging from oncology, musculoskeletal rehab, neurological rehab, mental health, performance, and much more, all of which you can access 24/7. That means you can purchase the webinar and watch it at any time that suits you. You can claim our webinars as PD points via SS self-assessment tool, and as a valued listener of the podcast, you're entitled to $10 off any of our webinars, but do hurry because the code is only available to the first 10 purchases. Just use the code FIRST10. So head on over to Eventbrite and browse our webinars. The link is in the show notes and on the Bodytrack Academy Facebook page. I'd like to begin this podcast by acknowledging the Yagara and the Turrbal people as the traditional custodians of Meanjin, the lands on which our podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Welcome to the Bodytrack Academy podcast, created by EPs for EP. The podcast will take you on an in-depth understanding of everything an EP is faced with on a day-to-day basis, including clinical, personal, and business practices, to ensure you become the best practitioner possible. If you enjoy the podcast, make sure you like, share, follow us on whatever streaming service you use to ensure the message spreads and you are notified of any new podcasts or educational resources available to you. Furthermore, if you're not already part of our online academy, head over to Facebook and join the Bodytrack Academy. Happy listening. Well, here we are, the other side of Easter, another episode by the Bodytrack Academy. I'm your host, Dan Harth, and I'm delighted to be joined here from our senior exercise physiologist, Campbell Wright. G'day, Cam.
How are we going, Dan?
Very well. I think last time we were at the pod, you were talking with other Dan about POTS.
Yep.
Some good traction on that. And as always, if anyone has any feedback or questions, Cam and Dan are your EPs to chat to about POTS. Yep. But today, it's going to be a bit different. We're going to talk about blood flow restriction. So, Cam, I thought I would just introduce blood flow restriction first before we get into a really good case study you've had. So for anyone who doesn't know it or a bit of a refresher, can you remind us what blood flow restriction training is?
Yep. So blood flow restriction training is kind of based off the theory behind or why, how muscles grow. Like it's the new research on hypertrophy. We now know that muscles grow when there is a certain amount of occlusion through the muscle, and that's usually achieved by lifting enough weight to recruit enough muscle activation to be able to include those blood vessels. And that kind of has a cascade of effects to be able to build muscle. Blood flow restriction came from that, to kind of work around the weight side of it and do it in an artificial sense where we actually use a cuff to occlude the muscle and then work at a lower intensity to get the same or, if not, sometimes heightened results.
Yeah. And no paid partnership here, but we do use air bands. Quite good, quite easy to use, app-based. But back in the day, I do not recommend this, but it used to be where they tie anything and everything around muscles.
Tourniquets. Yeah, tourniquets. There's a lot that that people still use. Like on the internet, they will sell just manual pulling ones. For someone who is not really high risk, they could be okay. I would prefer that, more of the ones that measure the
inclusion,
rather than just guessing.
Yeah.
I still know people who use them.
Yeah. We know people, but we certainly don't condone it from an exercise physiology point of view and safety.
No, not at all.
Now, just before we do go into the case study, and we'll tap into why I used this particular one, but is there any main kind of contraindications of using blood flow restriction that you can share with the listeners as well?
Yeah, a lot of the thromboembolisms, kind of DVTs, anything circulation or neuropathic base, we kind of stick away from in terms of anything occlusion related, blood, or really high blood pressure, any cardiovascular risk factors that are probably on the higher end as well. The good thing about those air bands, again, no pay partnership, but they run through a form.
Yeah, three-phase screening.
Three-phase screening about, yeah, so that it can be really helpful to just do straight away. But I know that there is, it's pretty accessible, the contraindications to like prolactin training just on the internet as well. But yeah,
perfect. And the good thing is, you know, in that three-phase screening, there's a low risk where you could freely use it. There's medium where you might get some, might need to get a permission from your GP for the client to use it, and then there's just the high risk, which is a no-go. So it classifies it really well. Now we won't go too much further into the in-depths of the physiology of the of blood flow restriction, but there is a few podcasts and resources out there about it now. Something that is very popular in rehabilitation concepts. So we're today going to bring all that research to a practical concept that Cam has gone through with one of his clients. So firstly, let's just introduce the client about their conditions and their limitations and why they came to see you first, Chan, and kind of that initial assessment that you did.
Yeah, so this client of mine is 70-year-old male, and he's a plays tennis on was used socially, but now it's kind of in the masters kind of competitive style of tennis, and he originally came from multiple musculoskeletal issues, shoulder, some defense related injuries that he's had, but the main one that he noted was his right knee was just anterior knee pain consistently through any exercises ever done. So he was going to the gym very regularly, diagnosed knee arthritis, which was more on the heightened severe end, but wasn't keen to go get any surgery because of how active he was, and a lot, just anything that was required, knee bending, lunging, kneeling in the garden, anything like tennis, high impact, change of direction, he would have consistent anterior and a little bit of medial knee pain as well, and that was for years, and years around. So he'd been to multiple exercise physiologists and physios, and as well as a personal trainer up the road in the gym, and then he came to me for a little bit of help after.
Okay, yeah, so that was going to be one of my questions. Had they sought other advice and help, which they had? Now, can you kind of give us an insight to what you sort of assessed initially? Probably a bit more subjective in this instance as well, but if you can take us through a journey of that assessment first, and then from there, how you came to the conclusion with using BFR and actually how you approached that with the client too.
Yeah, so it's in the initial assessment, it was about a lot of his history, about going through all his pathologies, and then we went through some movement screenings. We looked at his sit to stand, more functional capacity, looked at single leg proprioception. We looked at his ability to be able to sit to stand on one leg as well, on a heightened seat. And then he was stepping up, stepping down. That was a big thing where he found that walking down the steps was way harder than walking up. He actually experienced pain in both. And then so I just got him to do those movements, and when, especially on the step up and the step down, he'd get to a certain point and then he'd just drop because of that would be that point of pain.
Yep.
So that's where I wanted to start with everyone's like, let's try to improve that stability from that point of pain. And we didn't use the BFR to start with. We were just going through and trying to improve strength in open kinetic chain exercises, because the closed kinetic chain ones were the ones that he was really hesitant with, and just found that there was that every time he tried to do a step up, a squat, and things like that, it was just pain immediately. Moderate success, felt okay after the session, enjoyed that he wasn't experiencing a lot of knee pain. But again, he'd go play tennis, and he'd come back, and it'd just be the same thing in and out. And I thought, sure, we all have clients like that, where you just have those, you come in with similar things. And then the blood flow restriction cuff came from that. I was, where I originally heard the blood flow restriction was the
I think like they were using like astronauts use them to be able to get loaded in without and then there was a bit of research about like hypertrophy, and then it went kind of moved into the osteoarthritis field, and I was kind of reading a couple of things about the use of osteoarthritis, and it kind of transitioned my thought process like this client would be perfect. Because and it's gone to other clients as well, but it's just the thought of if you with an arthritic joint as inflammation there, usually it's weaker. And we need to build up strength and stability in that joint. And if you the consistent limiting factor is pain, when we're going to find it really hard to build strength when pain is the consistent limiting factor of being able to achieve those exercises.
And especially in the associations with pain and the fear avoidance cycle.
Cycle and that, and it just increases those negative feedbacks and like, and it can exacerbate pain. Like consistently pushing into that. And so we, one day I just approached him and I said, are you open to trying this? And I explained it. The mechanism of how blood flow restriction works. So I said, look, if it's if the main thing that's limiting you to getting stronger is pain, let's try to get the stimulus of muscle growth without that limiting factor of pain. And he was really, really open to it. He did want to do the screening just to make sure he was safe to do it. But he was really open to it in the end, which is good.
Fantastic. A few things I'll pick from you. Your answer there was the first part, especially for any new practitioners, exercise physiologists in the field, the thing that you've done, Ken, as well, is actually in your assessment gone to what the client has said has been an issue. So he's saying going downstairs in particular, also going upstairs, impact. In your assessment, you're actually looking at that, which is great, because a lot of the time, your first year out, especially, you can go, oh, I don't want to put them in pain, but without that you wouldn't know what the limiting factor is, you wouldn't know what their capacity is. So just an important part from there to draw away for any assessment, you as long as you're justifying why you're doing that and finding out where their limitation is, that is essential to do in any assessment, but it's obviously worked really well for this case here. Now just on the at the time, were they continually playing tennis as well? So it wasn't, we're not into a space where the client was really fear avoidant of any movements. They were quite comfortable doing everything.
Yeah. And I think it was he was also seeing one of our referred physios at the time. And it was the physio's recommendation for him to reduce tennis, which he did. He didn't feel as though it helped.
By the reduction.
Yeah. He didn't feel as though it helped any of his pain. And it's also, it was something that he really enjoyed doing. And it was hard to kind of get him to be happy with reducing pain. And, you know, probably in theory, he probably should have reduced pain, but there's also a reduced pain tennis, sorry. But if there's another way that we can, like, allow him to still do the things that he loves without having to just cut off everything and just focus on like little muscle groups kind of thing. I think the blood flow restriction allowed us to do that. And work within his goals of like still trying to improve, because he was training up for a pretty, he's one of his first competitions at the time.
Now it's good to identify as well whether we had a client that was more fear avoidant and dropping off things and being frustrated about that, because it can play into the emotional state and the enjoyment or the social factor that can drive pain, or are we looking at someone who is a overachiever or doesn't want to, you know, drop back because that could be capacity and capacity and demand low issue, right? So not so much the case of what we were dealing with, but good to clear that one up to get a good snapshot and idea about when to apply BFR. So we've had the conversation, done the screening, all eligible, everything's good to go. Take me to that first session that you did on blood flow restriction. There are some protocols and guidelines about what should be done, what should be applied. That was 75 rep protocol or certain cutoff. Did you start there, or was it regressed from that? How did you kind of piece that together?
Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to our podcast. We hope you're learning a lot in this particular episode. Just a shout out to our sponsor, HGG Performance, which provide very high quality, innovative gym equipment and custom fit outs to enable you to pivot your potential and smash your performance and rehab goals. They are world renowned for their innovative creations in the gym accessory space, including the best-selling ISO Tib LT, Tib Bar, Wrist Axe, and Nordic Bar. And I got to say, we're using some of these equipment in our clinic and finding some great results. Used by professional sports teams, athletes, and coaches worldwide, as well as the military, health practitioners, and apparently even Joe Rogan uses their gear. HGG is a proudly Aussie-owned company that makes all their gym equipment at their Gold Coast HQ. And our partnership with them, we are stoked to offer you 10% discount on any product with the code BODYTRACK10, so you can experience what all the hype is about yourself. So jump over to their website, go to the checkout, punch in the code of BODYTRACK10 to get 10% off on any of their great innovative gym equipment and start using today. Thanks very much.
We actually try to start straight into the 75 reps. So for people who don't unaware of that, it's a 30 repetitions at 80% of your blood flow occlusion, right? So you'll actually, the blood flow restriction cuffs that we use assess full occlusion, and then you drop back to 80% of that. You do 30 repetitions followed by a minute break, then 15, then 15, then 15. Then that is... by the end of that, your legs are screaming. But he was unable to achieve that. So he did 30 repetitions, and then he got about 4 repetitions, and then he felt really uncomfortable. And not in terms of his knee pain. He had actually no knee pain. And we'll just sit to Sam's, by the way, for this.
Okay.
Just so he could have at least a little bit of help from the other side to start with. But... he was unable to do the second one. He felt like it was his muscles were really burning, and he felt really uncomfortable. So he actually dropped that down to 15, 15, 15 for the next session.
Yep.
And he tolerated that really well. He's now at 25, 15, 15.
Okay. Yeah. So still not quite the rep protocol, but
no.
Yeah. So this is what's interesting, because the kind of 75 rep protocol has been fairly well researched, but it sounds like we've seen some benefit already from just doing a juice protocol. So let's talk about that. Where is this client currently at with, you know, up and down stairs and impact and everything?
So he's significantly improved. Now he's playing tennis without pain, which is great. He is mostly pain free in a lot of his stair movements and things like that. There are some days where it comes back. I think that the chronic nature of this knee pain, he's had it for 20 plus years, and makes it sometimes hard to have really long periods of no pain,
because
he has weeks where he just has nothing, and then he'll, you know, play more tennis than usual, and then it will start to hurt again. He's had it assessed. It doesn't seem to be tendinopathy related. It just tends to be volume load and related. But he is now, the biggest thing that we notice after a BFR session, especially in here, is that he's, when he steps up and goes back down, he doesn't have that like sticking point of pain. He has to drop through that range of movement.
Right.
When his knee's bad, he'll start with that. Let me do BFR, and then he can do the whole program and step up. So we start in the BFR, then step ups come after.
Yeah.
We are now at a point where if his knee feels really good, we don't do the BFR. Mm-hmm. We just go through those movements that we've chosen to be help him with tennis.
Yeah.
Well, but when his knee does feel, and he usually comes in and says, "Will you BFR today?"
he's excited
to do it. He's like, "I had a little bit of knee pain, I just want to do it today." And usually, he used to need it every session.
Yeah.
But now it's come to more of like a management kind of thing, and that's still just such a good thing to do. But the main improvement that we see, subjective pain, of course, but that capacity for him to be able to, after BFR, to be able to do full range of movement exercises, lunging, as well. And then we used to be able to lunge, step up, step down with very, very minimal pain.
Yeah, fantastic. So I'll just bring it back to that instantaneous kind of effect, right? So you're saying that it sometimes comes in and has a step down, wasn't it, where he's finding a bit of a drop, but then you put the BFR, it comes back and he's better.
Yeah.
What would you, and we might not have the answers here, but what would you kind of owe that to?
I would say a couple of things. Mm-hmm. I would say that if we can get, when we're at that muscle occlusion,
yep,
of, you know, over 70%, in this case 80, we've actually manufactured it to 80%, you'll have a big neural drive to be able to recruit as many motor units to help that movement.
Because sure. Yeah.
We have to, once we're at that occlusion, or 70%+ of maximal voluntary contraction, which happens when we occlude like this, that's how it works. We will have, I think we will have a big neural drive. So he's getting his big tight 2x what he's got there, muscle fibers awake in there. I think without that, we are unable to get those higher order motor units because pain is stopping him getting the muscle contraction that we would need to be able to recruit, or the repetitions or the volume in that we would need to get those motor units to help out.
Right. And it's driving that inhibition that we know that pain can do.
And then it inhibits his capacity to be able to get as much out of those muscles that, you know, are around that knee. I think with using a BFR cuff, he's able to recruit those higher order motor units without pain being a limiting factor. And with then the rest of the session, he's got those motor units all fired and doing work. Yeah. And then we can do the rest of the exercises knowing that inhibition hasn't happened, that we've worked around that to start.
Yeah. Fantastic. And you're noticing our little movements too.
Yeah.
And educating them, I'm assuming, as well, for the client, saying that's the reason why. Do you worry in that case then? I'll sit on the fence with it. Are you worried about dependency on BFR with this client?
Definitely. And we've discussed this as well because, as I said before, like him coming in and being like, can we do BFR today?
Yeah.
Isn't like, we don't want that client-initiated session where, because it can create that reliance of, this fixes me, therefore I don't need to do anything because the blood flow restriction can't fix me. And it's not like, and we've had discussions about this with him. He's good that he's responsive in the way that he understands that it's his goal is to be able to not use them. And he is very, like, every time we reprogram, we try to use BFR less and less. And he's very open to trying more movements to test.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
But yes, it's definitely, and the thing is, like, in a clinic setting, like, he's, unless he's going to spend however many $100 it is for a BFR cuffs, he can only do it in here.
That's the advantage. Yeah.
The advantage of him not being able to use it and do other exercises that strengthen him without having them is well above him having to rely on these BFR cuffs to get through his week kind of thing. But he's on the track. He's on track that way.
That's good. And obviously, it sounds on that, you haven't advised him to tie a rope around his leg to help the same situation for a torn Canadian. Very good. Safe practice. No, that's fascinating because I think, like anything, when you use assistive devices like BFR or anything, people can become, and particularly in this case where this gentleman has gone to different practitioners and not got a lot of win from it, right? So the fact that he's now found something, it's always something to be wary of, and Cam's done a really good job there about the importance of education about how this will assist, but not cure and be the reliant factor as to why they can continue with their day-to-day life. I think the other thing to address too, and maybe there's some more emerging evidence on this, Cam, but I do remember reading that BFR has to still be accompanied by your traditional strength training as well.
Yeah.
Reasons as to why that is, I would think it's more around the load of the tendons and everything as well. Is there anything further that you can comment on about that?
A lot of that research was done in the athletic population, right, where strength was a mediating factor for performance.
Yeah.
So because you work at about 30% of like your the load that you would traditionally need for that occlusion, like you can, there can be that point of we're not actually giving your body enough of that actual load to become more sport, for the sport specific advantages. I'm not sure in the case of like osteoarthritis whether, you know, it needs to be accompanied by like strength work, but I like doing it. But in the sport field, because BFR, there was there's a lot of research for in, and that's where a lot of the research for BFR is, in athletic performance. So there was a lot of research that came around for using BFR was really good for increasing like specific muscle strength, but I don't know if that translated across to like that central nervous system kind of full body power and strength is required for sport performance. So then they recommended using accessory like strength work with BFR as maybe like a later in the session kind of strategy, or big muscle group and then do other accessory exercises. But yeah, that's the only thing I've really read. I haven't really read too much about like the chronic condition and needing both. But you can kind of extrapolate it, I suppose.
You can, and you know, nonetheless, you can still use that to your advantage in a way, particularly in this case, if someone is starting to show signs of reliance, like you can set that foundation at the start as well. And I'm sure you did as well, but we're going over it with the education going, you know, the BFR is here to assist, and we still need to do the other stuff as well, the traditional strength training or the stability work you had them doing, and having kind of a combination of both to get the best outcome, because then, you know, you're ticking a few boxes there. You're making sure the client's not just reliant on one thing that's going to help them and be pain-free and all that, and you're tapping into both of those areas where you're getting that central nervous system excitability, but also then getting the big 2X fibers, like you said, firing as well. I think that might be enough for our listeners to take away and use BFR if they ever wanted to. Any final thoughts, Ken?
My final thought would be that I've started to use BFR a lot with clients who are coming in with pain mediated like pathologies or restrictions. I think that if your person, especially knees, because BFR are restricted as to where you can put them, you know, like they seem to work really well for elbows and knees, not as well for a lot of other things. Like, I know there has been some research into like bench press and things with them. However, it's like a lot for the legs. I think that if you have a client that has chronic knee issues, don't shy away from BFR cuff. I think it should be, it's a really, really good strategy to be able to get your client going and overcome a hurdle that is common with chronic knee pain. So just try it with your clients, as long as they're open and you educate them that it's not the most comfortable thing in the world. It burns, muscles burn, and they are and they're open to doing it. I think it can be a really good strategy to get on top of the your client's pain.
Fantastic. Well, Ken, as always, it has been wonderful to pick your brain and go through the physiology of strength training and also BFR in this case. I'm sure we'll chat again soon, another highly engaging topic. But for now, thanks very much for joining us on the Body Track Academy.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. So remember to share, like, or follow up to keep updated with all our podcasts and educational resources.